Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Most psychotherapists spend their day listening to other people's problems. But that job becomes complicated when a psychotherapist is dealing with their own catastrophic life events. So how do they handle all of that? Writer and psychotherapist Lori Gottlieb talks about her own journey dealing with a difficult breakup and her day-to-day work in her newest book called Maybe You Should Talk to Someone, A Therapist, Her Therapist, and Our Lives Revealed. She shares her personal struggle dealing with a life-altering breakup, her experiences in therapy, and the patients who taught her as much about their lives as they did her own. Gottlieb joins Lake Effect's Joy Powers in the studio to talk about her book and her unique journey to becoming a psychotherapist.
How did you first become acquainted with therapy?
I first became acquainted with therapy because I had been to therapy before, and I never imagined that one day I would become a therapist. I just found it really useful in my life. And it wasn't until later on when, I sort of had this very nonlinear path of working in story and the human condition from different angles. That was in the film business, television, going up to medical school, becoming a journalist. And it was through that process that ultimately I decided that I wanted to go from helping people to tell their stories to helping people to change their stories.
In the book, you talk about this idea that a therapist should be essentially a mirror for a patient. And it reminds me of this idea in journalism that objectivity is king and opinions, you know, are this kind of sin. And the central conceit of your book is that therapists are just human beings with flaws and limitations. Is that a difficult concept for you to grapple with as a therapist? Because as a journalist, it's certainly something that I grapple with.
Well, what I'm really trying to show in the book by bringing myself in, so we follow four of my patients as they go through their struggles, and I'm helping them with that. And then the fifth patient is me as I go through something with my own therapist. And the reason that I wanted to show both sides of that is because, like I say at the beginning of the book, my greatest credential is that I'm a card-carrying member of the human race, that I bring my humanity into the room all the time. And I think as a journalist, because I also work as a journalist, and I had for many years before becoming a therapist, you bring yourself into the interaction with the person that you're talking to. So that doesn't mean the interview is about you. It doesn't mean the therapy session is about you. But it means that when you are trying to connect with another person, you have to bring your humanity into that experience.
It has to be a little difficult as a therapist, because something that comes up in the book is, you know, you don't want to share too much of yourself with your patients, because ultimately you're there to talk to them, not talk about yourself. But there also then becomes this kind of avoidance that can be a real impediment and can lead to something like lying. How do you strike that balance?
So in the book, there's this example of an intern who was going on vacation and lied about where he was going by omission, you know. And I think that it's really important that the relationship is about the person who's coming in for help. So I think there are ways to say, you know, there are ways not to answer a question without lying. And there are ways to talk about in the room with the person, you know, this really feels too personal, or this really isn't about me, and to talk about what their curiosity is about and what they imagine having this answer would do for them. But I also think that again, we need to be human. There are certain things where, you know, I think nowadays therapists are much more open. And again, I don't mean that they're revealing things about their lives willy-nilly, but I mean that, if someone says, you know, do you have children? Maybe we would answer that question depending on the context and why they're asking and how we think it might benefit them to know this or not know this. So we're always weighing whether this is going to benefit the patient. How will this benefit the patient? If it won't, we're not going to go there. But if it will, maybe we might bring that into the conversation.
Do you think sharing parts of yourself is important for these kinds of relationships? Because, you know, I'm someone who has gone to therapy, although not in a while, and some of the people I knew quite a lot about. Some people I knew almost nothing about, and it does impact your relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. So as a rule, we're not going to bring personal information about our lives into the room, but very strategically, we might. So there was a colleague of mine who was seeing somebody whose son had Tourette syndrome, and this patient felt very alone, like nobody understood her experience. And the therapist happened to have a son who has Tourette's. And at one point, you know, very far into the relationship, it wasn't at the beginning of the relationship, she revealed that. And it really helped this person. It helped this person to know that what she was talking about, the therapist truly understood in a very visceral way. So they didn't talk about the therapist's son in their work. They talked about the patient's son. But just knowing that the therapist understood on a completely different level really helped this person. You know, and there are many other instances where somebody wouldn't bring that up.
Yeah. One of the central relationships that you discuss in the book is with a woman who has terminal cancer. Is she someone who I certainly identified with in part because I think a lot of us live our lives kind of the way she was living her life. And then when she's confronted by, you know, a life-altering, life-ending event, it's how she deals with it, it is very human. And I think we learn about a lot about you in that relationship. What did you learn from that?
It was a really difficult experience to watch this person who was so lovely go through this process of dying right in front of me. And to go through it, not just in front of me, but with her in a way. And at the same time, there was so much vibrancy. There was the room was alive when she was in the room in a way that sometimes it isn't with other people, because I think that the awareness of our limited time really brings things into focus. You know, she made me much more aware of my mortality. We all know that life has 100% mortality rate, but we kind of think, yeah, that's for other people, or yeah, that's a long time away. But the truth is that most of us don't know how or when we're going to die. And I think that if we live our lives more intentionally every day, we don't need a terminal diagnosis to have that awareness and to really make conscious choices and not kind of skate through life. And so that's what I really learned from her, was to make sure that to live while I'm living.
Yeah. The book, of course, is called A Therapist, Her Therapist, and Our Lives Revealed. And I don't want to reveal too much about the book, but throughout it, you're going through a pretty life-altering experience, which is what brings you back to therapy. And I liked the analogy you used, you know, water, water everywhere, but not a drop to drink. Of course, so many of your relationships are with other therapists. And you had very specific qualifications that you wanted out of the therapist. I'm curious, why? Why did you want such a specific kind of therapist?
Well, I think what's so funny about that is that even as a therapist, you might know something, you might know better, but you kind of do all the things that other people do when they're looking for a therapist, when they're going to therapy. You know, you're just a regular person when you're on the other side of it. And I had this idea that if I went to this specific kind of therapist, that this kind of therapist would validate my position, and then I would feel better. And of course, that's not what this therapist does, which was the best possible thing that could have happened. And so I think that a lot of people come to therapy because they want to tell their story, and they're so sure that their version of the story is the accurate version of the story. And yet we're all unreliable narrators. We all have faulty narratives, and often those faulty narratives are the things that are tripping us up. They're the things that are getting in our way. It's our blind spots. It's the part of the story that we can't see. It's the other person's perspective. And so a lot of times people are surprised that when they come to therapy, their therapists are sort of asking questions about their story and looking for, you know, what are sort of the parts of the story that are missing? What are the parts that maybe they're emphasizing or minimizing? How can they see themselves more clearly? I talk about the difference between idiot compassion and wise compassion. Idiot compassion is what we do with our friends, like, you know, yeah, that guy broke up with you. He was such a jerk. You dodged a bullet. Or, yeah, your boss didn't promote you. He doesn't see how talented you are. She doesn't see how talented you are. And it's like, yet a lot of times we can see what's going on with our friends. We can see that this happened the last three times in their relationships because that person is very suspicious and always going through the other person's phone, or because the person didn't get the promotion because they actually aren't putting in the work, or they don't get along well with their colleagues. But we don't say that. We don't say, if a fight breaks out in every bar you're going to, it might be you, which is what they really need to hear. And so when people come to therapy, they get wise compassion, which is, well, what do you think is the underlying struggle or pattern that has gotten you into the situation in the first place? And that can be life-changing.
Yeah, it was interesting. Although you have all of the tools of a therapist, you did have this experience that was, of course, like any other patient. And it's interesting because the book vacillates between your experiences as a therapist and then your experiences as a patient. When you were going through that moment, when you were living through that moment, did you see all of those parallels in real time?
No, I didn't. I didn't always see them in real time. Sometimes I did, but often, you know, you don't realize what you're doing. And I think that's the way that sometimes we can't see ourselves clearly. The beauty of being outside of someone's life is you have the vantage point of not of zooming out, of not living so closely to the issues, so you can see them more clearly. And I think that's what good therapy does for people. It helps them to see themselves in a more accurate way, and it helps them to see their own role in their situation. So a lot of people come into therapy and they want something to change. And usually what they want to change is someone else or something else. And what they come to realize is that they have a role in what's not working, and that's changeable. They have so much agency in their own lives that they've given up because they feel helpless in their situation. And what we try to say is, here's where you have choices. I want you to look at all of the choices that you have, and then here's how you can make better choices.
And I think this kind of gets to my last question. What do you hope people take away from this book?
I hope that they feel more connected to one another. I think that every single person who reads this book will see themselves in one of the five people, including me, in the book, not because they're so similar to those people, but because underlying whatever issue that person is coming in with are the same universal struggles, feelings, the ways that we trip ourselves up, the ways that we self-sabotage. I think human beings are ridiculous, and I say that affectionately, because I think that sometimes we take ourselves so seriously and we can't see the humor in our lives. And I want people to find more joy. I want them to navigate their relationships more smoothly. And the title of the book, Maybe You Should Talk to Someone, doesn't mean everybody should go to a therapist. It means we need to be talking more to one another. And I hope that that's what they take away from the book.
Lori Gottlieb is a psychotherapist and the writer behind the weekly Dear Therapist column in The Atlantic. She spoke with Like Fex Joy Powers about her latest book, Maybe You Should Talk to Someone, A Therapist, Her Therapist, and Our Lives Revealed.